Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Jeffrey.
Yes, sir, Brian. How are you, man?
What a crazy afternoon, huh?
Yes, it has been. Technology. Can't live with it. Can't live without it.
Ah! Not only technology, but just this scheduling craziness.
Yeah. We're too busy, that's for sure.
Well, yes, we are. I should turn off the cartoons.
Yes.
Hey, we have Ed Taylor with us from Calvary Chapel Aurora, one of our favorite missions-oriented pastors in the universe.
That is very true.
Sorry, sorry to all those other guys we said that to. And
yeah, it makes me feel so good to be so special in your eyes.
Yes, yeah. So, hey, Ed, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well. The sun is out. It's not snowing in Colorado, and we're alive and get to serve the Lord. So those are all good ingredients.
Those are good ingredients.
I had to say that here in New Hampshire, we serve the Lord even when the weather's bad.
And, you know, here in Southern California, it's seldom ever bad. But I think, Ed, you're from SoCal, aren't you?
Yeah, I grew up just outside of Downey before.
Oh, you did? Here. Okay. Yeah. So I'm actually sitting in the San Diego area in Escondido, if you know where that is.
I do know where we were just there. I was teaching in Vista late last year, and we went to a Mexican restaurant in Escondido that we will never visit again.
Oh, no. Well, there's a few hundred to choose from, so that's...
Yeah, then, okay. So we were, that's how it rolls with me. I, of all the few hundred we could have chosen, we chose that one.
Yeah. Well, hey, brother, it's really good to have you on. And, you know, just want to start up front by letting you know that, you know, the vision that God's given us as a ministry to facilitate local churches sending their own to the field and then taking care of them. You know, you guys do that well. And that's one of the reasons I talk with Brian about maybe having you on the podcast, because in many ways you do a lot of the things that we encourage churches to do. And so, you know, what I want to do is just kind of just ask you some questions about how you got to where you're at and you know, how things have unfolded to sort of put you into this position, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. I'd love to talk it out.
Okay. So I guess the first place to start is you actually were the planter of the church where you're at right now, correct?
Yes. Yeah. In 1999, we moved from Southern Cal. I moved with my corporate job. I took a job here in Aurora to a place where there wasn't a Calvary chapel, and to a place where I could have a job. And we launched off with about 30 people in 1999.
Oh, wow. Well, God's done some amazing things. So that's what, you're on your 20th anniversary this year?
Yeah, this is our 20th year. We celebrate, you know, nobody told us how to plant a church, what to do and what not to do. So our first Sunday was actually December 26th, the day after Christmas.
Oh my gosh.
And that's our anniversary.
What a great testimony.
It's actually smart because, you know, a lot of churches close that week after between Christmas and New Year's.
That's true.
You're the only store in town.
So Ed, tell me sort of, you know, how did your interest, you know, personally in you know, global missions, how did that sort of come about? Did it start when you were in SoCal prior to getting to Colorado or what?
You know, it didn't. It's interesting. When I moved here to Southern to Aurora, I didn't have a concept of what I was doing. And I don't want it to sound like, well, like a lot of church pastors, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I knew some of the things that I came to do. I came to teach the Bible. I came to build up the saints, and I had a vision to maybe see a church grow to 100 adults. I might be able to quit my job, and missions was not a part of my DNA personally. I'd never been on a mission trip, with the exception of a trip we might have taken to. By the time I moved here, I was walking with the Lord for 8 years.
Okay.
And I had maybe taken a trip to Ensenada or TJ to take clothes down to an orphanage, but I hadn't traveled out of the country. With the exception of Mexico, I hadn't, neither did I have a desire.
Okay.
It wasn't a part of my makeup to travel. I felt like I knew what my calling was. My calling was to train and mobilize and church planting and missions in my mind in the early days of ministry were a part of the church, but mm-hmm. there was zero intentionality when it came to either one of those things. I really believed that kind of how we were discipled, and that was, you know, if a healthy sheep beget a healthy sheep, and so people just, if you teach in the Bible, people just decide to go in the mission field, or they decide to plant a church. And in those early days, we weren't intentional at all.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because that idea of, you know, healthy sheep want to reproduce, and, you know, sort of some of the taglines of the Calvary Chapel movement, you know, that I've been part of for like 30 years too. And just, you know, thinking about the comments that you just made, I you know, when Field of Dreams first came out, and the line was, you know, if you teach it, they will come. And you know, a lot of guys adopted that as sort of a tagline for their church. If you just teach the word, people will come. And what I saw, and you know, in my own church and my own personal experience, when God called us to go to the field, was actually, if you teach it, they will come. But actually, if you teach it, they will go. In other words, if you're faithfully teaching the word, sooner or later, the character of the missionary God's going to come, you know, through to some of your people, and he's going to call them to go. And is that sort of how it happened to you?
No, you know, I'm in my pastoral capacity, I have a real strong administrative mind.
Okay.
And so one of the decisions we made early on was to set up our budget. Like I tell church planters now, you know, set up a general budget, 40% administrative, 40% operational, 10% savings, 10% missions and outreach.
Okay.
And so we had monies on our budget line associated to missions, you know, that not knowing what I'm doing, how to pastor a church, learning all of the ins and outs of pastoring, we were looking for missionaries to financially support. That's how it started.
Okay.
We've got this money, and it's not going to do us any good in the sitting in the bank. And we want to model. I felt like I needed to model for the church what it meant to tithe. Mm-hmm. And so we were looking for missionaries, and a couple came through our church very early on that had a vision to go to Turkey. And since they were a part of our church, we got behind them, sent them, and that was our only missionary for a while, besides a local pregnancy center, Gideon's. But we had a couple in Turkey that we financially supported, and then this thought of, let's make sure we don't forget them.
Right.
Although I know that we didn't do the best job not forgetting them. I mean, we were so caught up in a growing church, reaching our city, that we did support them. We did occasionally write them letters, or obviously we supported them every month. But that was our mission. That was our missions endeavor for a couple years.
Okay.
Until two things happened. The first one was that I was at a conference listening to a guy share all these stories of his mission or his ministry endeavors. It wasn't just missions. And I remember leaning over to the brother next to me and saying, man, this guy has a lot of stories. You know, he wasn't really teaching a Bible study. He was sharing a lot of stories. And then the guy next to me had more of a dry sense of humor. And he looked at me and says, Ed, he has a lot of stories because he has a lot of stories. You should go get some stories.
Right.
And that planted a seed in my mind to say, man, I don't know if I want it. I don't think I want to go to a war zone. I don't think I'm processing. So now I've got a new endeavor as the leader.
Right.
And a second thing happened, and this is interesting, especially guys listening to a missionary podcast. We get cold calls for missionaries, probably 5 or 6, 7, 8, 10 a week.
Yes.
Everyone wants support, and it's always a noble endeavor.
Right.
But when you get those, unless you have a relationship, most of them, we say thank you, we'll pray for you, we'll put you on our prayer list, and we don't support. And I got this call. Actually, it was an email, and then it was a call, and it was just a cold call from a brother that wanted to come and talk to me about his mission. And I said, no. And I did the same old thing. I told my assistant, no, I don't have time to meet with him. But he was persistent and he had a relationship with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'll meet you. And we went and had lunch and he pressed me to go to Egypt with him.
Okay.
I had no, absolute zero desire to go to Egypt. Even back then in the early days when we were doing Israel trips, just tours,
right.
I didn't like the jet lag. Jet lag didn't like me. I'd always get sick. The food would, I was just being stretched beyond. He took me to Egypt and it revolutionized my thinking. I completely came back from Egypt a changed man, and I credit him for changing and adding the missionary dynamic. Like he was the stories were the catalyst, but William pushed me over the edge, and then going on a plane, leaving my family, doing work in the very depths of the slums of Cairo,
right?
Seeing it with my own eyes, experiencing it, loving the people there, serving the people there. I'm like, our church has to change.
Right. Okay. So how many years into the church plant was that when you took that trip to Egypt? How many years had it been in the church plant?
You know, I'm thinking within the first 5 years. I don't have the date, but I would say within about 5 years, I avoided traveling. I avoided even traveling in the U.S. Like I just couldn't or didn't want to. I mean, that's not even couldn't. I just didn't want to adapt my life.
Right.
I felt like pastoring, which was definitely filling my plate, was my role in the body. And I think I was okay with that. I'm not a missionary. I don't want to write a book of exploits. Even when we were praying about planting a church, God made it clear that I wasn't to leave the United States, that he made me to mobilize from within the United States. That was very clear.
Okay.
But man, did things change and for the good.
Right. So was at the time when you made that trip to Egypt, had the church grown to the point where you were full-time then on staff and there was a sort of a resource base to do more?
Yeah, the church was very well established by then.
Okay. And
I'm sure that we had other missionaries that we had supported, again, because the budget was going to be growing at the time. And up until that point in Egypt, I had done a few trips. I'd done a few festivals of life with Horizon in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We had a few mission trips for the kids. I mean, we had a typical, what I would call a typical church experience where we would do some short-term trips. And the only intention was really is to expose our kids and different people in the church to other parts of the world and get them involved. But the intentionality really came when I experienced it myself.
Okay. Right. So how did that look then when you got back and you experienced what you'd experienced and now you had some stories from firsthand experience? How did that look in infusing that into the body? How did you do that?
Well, I had to change the culture. I believe God called me to change the culture. And I would say that we planted Calvary Chapel Aurora with the same general philosophy of Pastor Chuck. And that is Ephesians. The pastor's job is to edify the saints for the work of the ministry. And
right.
So my emphasis was teaching, equipping. I've always had this bent on, I've always felt like the Lord has wanted to use me to train. But my thought was training people within the context of ministry and teaching them how to serve and not so much church planting, but around the same time, like maybe charting it out, maybe after I heard because I don't have the timeline of it all, but after I heard the guy share those stories, I came back and we changed the vision of our church.
Okay.
And I'm a pull the Band-Aid guy kind of guy. So I changed the vision of our church from the typical back of the bulletin of Costa Mesa. You know, I believe worship should be intelligent and all of that. And we changed it to win, disciple, and send.
Okay.
And we changed the vision of our church to evangelism. And I'm not an evangelist. I'm not like Pastor Greg Laurie or Pastor Raul Reese, who can just stand in the pulpit and blink their eyes and 100 people get saved. I'm more of a Bible teacher. I'm more of an exhorter. And so evangelism was never on my radar. Missions was never on my radar. Intentionally, I remember back in the day, another prominent Bible teacher, Calvary guy in Florida, had shared at a conference that, hey guys, you know what? You need to share the gospel and give an invitation every message, every message. I never had been exposed to that thought. So I'm like, well, I'm going to do it. And that there was all kinds of changes. And then as I'm talking out loud, I remember the day Brother Dave Gordon walked into our church. And Dave was a missionary, a pastor in Russia. And he was out in, what's that part of Russia where you get banished to?
Siberia.
Siberia. So he was in Siberia and the mission wrecked his life.
Yes.
And it wrecked his marriage and he came back beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up walking into our church. And so between that pastor, Dave Gordon, now Dave, right. You know, I didn't let him do anything. I could tell he needed to be healed up. He right. needed, and he just sat for a while. But man, when he healed up, I don't know if you know Dave personally. I think you do.
I do. Yes.
When he healed up, he was just given freedom to do whatever he felt like he needed to do in the realm of missions. And then that's when Egypt came in and I began to cooperate with him. And, you know, it's amazing when the lead pastor gets involved in something, how the church will follow. And so that we changed the vision, we changed the direction. I think one of the things that I was afraid of too, and kind of piecing it all together, this is interesting. I haven't really thought about this in a long time, but I was afraid to travel. I didn't like traveling. I already mentioned that, but right. I also had this insecure fear of traveling that somehow it would hurt the church because the pastor's not there.
Right.
And that artificial, instead of listening to the Lord and obeying him, I mean, I think that there were probably times when God told me to go somewhere and I just said, I got to be here. And I had some novel way of describing, well, I'm the pastor. I should be here and I shouldn't travel. And probably guys around me too. Who do you think you are? And you're just taking a vacation or whatever nonsense would come up. I let that all get to me instead of just obeying God and going where he told me to go. And all that's a perfect storm of this radical transformation of not just giving money to missionaries,
right?
But actually you talk about, I forget the phrase that's used, but the care groups, right? Care teams. And I think we should have small care teams per missionary, but the church is a care team and I'm the chief caregiver.
Yeah. And that is not, I mean, that as a missions guy, I mean, that really excites me to hear that, because really it's not the norm. And so, you know, what God worked in you at that time. And then, I mean, that the timing of having Dave where he was at and your willingness to unleash him in a sense.
Yes.
Yeah. But it really does all flow from the guy in the pulpit, the main guy in the pulpit. And so that's huge to hear that, brother.
And we didn't come, you know, the church that I came from with Calvary Chapel Downey with Jeff Johnson, he still does a tremendous amount of trips and he has a lot of work in Russia and, or at least previously in Russia. Now they're in Cuba. But not having been on staff there, not having been exposed to the thinking there, not just kind of viewing it from the outside. Like I think that I did what most pastors do and they're so caught up in the church that's in front of them that they forget the Great Commission or what we're seeing today, which really ticks me off, but this whole thing of why waste money on the mission field? It's such a waste of money to send people overseas when you can just spend all that money here in the United States. And I just like, man, read the book of Acts. Like it's Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the world. It's in that order, but they're all included.
And it's simultaneous too in the, in the original language. It's not this and then this and then this and then that. Yeah, it's simultaneous. Wow. Really, Really good stuff. So now you, it's interesting because you used the term, you know, you had to change the culture of the church.
Yes.
After that trip, sort of that, it's kind of common. You hear missionaries say they, or somebody goes on a trip and it sort of ruins them for the normal.
Yes.
And so you were sort of ruined for the normal. So how did you do that? How did you take what God had put in your heart now and what he'd exposed you to? How did you actually do that into the church? To begin that cultural change?
Well, you know, for good or for bad, the Lord has made me a man of action. And and so when I'm convinced that something is from the Lord, then, you know, I want to introduce it to the church and I want them to be excited. And I think when I came back from Egypt, I had firsthand account of this church. I have firsthand account of us walking through the big projects of Cairo and open sewers and handing out food, and this poor pastor that has given up a lucrative life. Being trained by the Presbyterian Seminary in Cairo, he could have had a six-figure life there in the professional church, but he chose instead to leave it behind and live in the projects of where he planted the church. I mean, those true stories are now filtered through not just a missionary update, not just some pictures that we throw up on the wall, right. Not just 5 minutes of service, but now we're talking about the trip and we're talking about going back again. And we're talking, our language changes, you know, the culture changes, the language changes. It's almost like it's like the mission field. You've got to learn a new language. And what's the language of evangelism? What's the language of sending? And so for me, we became a sending church, which incorporates a lot of different things. It incorporates church planting. It incorporates equipping people that might go to another church and serve there. It equates to short-term missions. It equates to long-term missions. Now we're not just edifying the saints for the work of the ministry. Now we're edifying the saints for the work of the ministry and sending them and mentioning that constantly and emphasizing, hey, another family's leaving, but remember, we're a sending church. Or, man, check this out. A part of the world needs to be reached, and we're a sending church. And just redefining a portion of our with it, and really, it wasn't a subtraction in our church. It was an addition. God had added this to our church to see, well, what can we get behind? What can we get behind one time? What can we get behind faithfully? And then what about you guys sitting here? Every time I mention a missionary, I go, you know, they were sitting right there where you're sitting. It wasn't too long ago that, you know, Bob and Kate were cooking in our kitchen for an outreach, and now they're in Texas with a ministry they started to be disaster relief around the country. And I always want to tell the church, but they're just like you. You're sitting in their chair, and it's okay if we plant a church and 100 people leave. It's okay because we're an evangelistic church. Those chairs will fill up. We're not here to build a church. We're here to see people saved and fulfill God's call upon their life. So the language changed, the illustrations changed,
and your expectations changed, which then changed their expectations.
Yes. Yes. And it became like, I mean, today I'm just getting all fired up about it, thinking about it. Like it became contagious. It's like, what are we going to do next? And here's this kid from Southern California, and you know, not a kid anymore, but thinking, you know, up until that point, my family never traveled out of the country. So I never really wanted to travel out of the country. But now it's not the travel portion, because I still don't like the travel portion. I still don't like hotels, foreign food. I mean, we sat down in Egypt and they served us a pigeon. Mm. A pigeon.
Yes.
And so that piece of it is still something that I have to adjust myself to. However, it's the people. There are people around the world that are in need of encouragement and love. And the people need us, but we need the people. I don't think, and it's not fully formed, but I don't think we're out missionaries because the world is hopeless without us. I think that we head out on the mission field because God wants to use us, and we're going to fulfill his call. But man, I needed Egypt. Egypt didn't need me. They were doing just fine without me. I needed that in order to add to my life this sense of, hey, there are people that are really literally called to leave your church, Ed, and it's your responsibility to find them, equip them, train them, send them, and stay with them until Jesus returns.
Oh, man, that's a great, concise statement right there. Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. So, you know, when this transition happened, now you mentioned earlier that there was this couple that originally that you guys supported that had gone to Turkey, and they were members of your church. Were they members of your church prior to their departure?
They were. Yeah. They were okay. Part of almost the original, that original core group.
Okay. And then you had sort of this revelation with the trip to Egypt, and now you're changing the culture of the church. Was at some point in the process, was there for the global missions, the people with the calling to go outside the country, did then you begin to build a structure or some sort of process for them to follow? And how did that come about?
Yeah, that's where Dave Gordon came in very handy, as we started to develop very rudimentary policies of what are we looking for in a family says they want to go on the mission field. And, you know, we're going to check on their spiritual health. We're going to check on their marital health. We're going to check on their financial health, because we experienced a lot of things, you know, we were coming up with one thing that it may be, again, you know, as people listen to this, it may be good or bad, but this I've always adopted. I don't necessarily want to read about how someone else does it until we hit a snag. I want to let God reveal to us what to do. I'm not opposed. I'm an avid reader, and I love reading, and I learn a lot that way. But when I know my personality can be leaning too much on policy and not on the Spirit. So I'm always trying to find the balance, because we need both. You know, we need both. I remember we had this discussion on church planning years ago, you know, the Calvary model is generally organic, but then most other church, you know, church movements are very intentional. And when we started to try to introduce intentionality to the Calvary movement, a lot of the big dogs and a lot of people got mad. No, we don't do it that way. We don't. And I mean, I'm cool with that. You didn't do it that way, but most of us didn't plant churches in a revival. And so, but we aren't in revival anymore. And so there's got to be some, I mean, we do everything intentionally, whether we use that word or not. Even not being intentional is intentional.
Yes, it is.
So trying to find that balance. And, you know, we learned things. Like one guy wanted to go out, but he wanted the support to pay his debt off. And as a pastor, I couldn't stomach that. Like, I didn't need anybody. I mean, I might be wrong or right, but the policy we adopted was, you can't use support to pay off your debt that you bought a TV and a clothes for your grandma. Like you've got to go on the mission field debt free. And that's something we've developed. Or, you know, we don't have surveys or anything, but it's very relational. We want to get to know you. We're going to spend a lot of time with you, whether it was Dave or now the brother that took over for Dave, JJ, who is running at even a more feverish pace than Dave ever did. Like so really relationally getting to know them and then taking the step of faith. And we're much more developed in our policies now. As a matter of fact, I think JJ is about ready to hand to me a handbook for final review that we can give to anyone. And I even expect like doing a study on a weekend and giving that manual to everyone in our church. And say, go ahead, start praying about what God wants to do with your life.
This concludes part one of our interview with Pastor Ed Taylor of Calvary Chapel Aurora. Tune in for part two of this interview in the next episode of Facilitating the Mission.